You remain standing for the reading of the Word of God. It comes to us this morning from Luke's Gospel, the 8th chapter, beginning in the 40th verse. Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. Just then there came a man named Jairus, a leader of the synagogue. He fell at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years old, who was dying. And as he went, the crowds pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years, and though she had spent all that she had on physicians, no one could cure her. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his clothes, and immediately her hemorrhage stopped. And then Jesus said, "Who touched me?" When all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowds surround you and press in on you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me, for I noticed that power had gone out from me." And when the woman saw that she could no longer remain hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him and declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." And while he was still speaking, someone came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher any longer." When Jesus heard this, he replied, "Do not fear, only believe, and she will be saved." When he came to the house, he did not allow anyone to enter with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. They were all weeping and wailing for her. But he said, "Do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and called out, "Child, get up." And her spirit returned, and she got up at once. And then he directed them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astounded, but he ordered them to tell no one what had happened. It's the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
You may be seated. Well, in case you hadn't figured this out by now, if you've been here a little while hearing me preach, I will this morning sheepishly and maybe even a little ashamedly admit that I find funny comedies that spoof religion. I don't mean the mean, antagonistic, demeaning kind of angry stuff. There's enough of that out there too. I mean the funny stuff, or stuff I think's funny, the things that help me laugh at myself. You know, when you do what I do, you can't take yourself too seriously, otherwise nobody's going to want to be around you. So I can admit, I loved John Belushi seeing the light at James Brown's church in the Blues Brothers. And his epiphany that sent he and his brother Elwood Blues off on a self-proclaimed mission from God. And I don't have to mention to you how much I like Ricky Bobby's prayer scene in Talladega Nights. And I probably shouldn't, but I will also admit that Samuel L. Jackson's quote of Ezekiel 25, an explanation of divine intervention to John Travolta in Pulp Fiction, is pretty classic. But do not go watch that movie if you haven't seen it and say, "The preacher told me to watch it." It's bad, you know. And I know I shouldn't watch it, even the cleaned up TV version of it. And I can tell you that undoubtedly one of my favorite movie characters of all time is George Clooney, playing the Depression-era escaped convict religious skeptic Ulysses Everett McGill in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Now you can go watch that movie if you haven't, because it has really good theology in it. One of my favorite lines in his movie that I've used here before is his quote, in response to seeing this long line of people, including his two partners, waiting for baptism at the river. He looks at them all and says, "Hard times flushes the chumps." But now what I never found funny, that I occasionally used to see on TV that was really no less fictional than the movies that I just mentioned, but far more disturbing, were the faith, healing, prosperity gospel crusades by the likes of Robert Tilton or Benny Hinn. The exploitation of the fragile faith of desperate people. People hoping against hope for a miracle, spending their last dollar bleeding away their last hope. Now, Everett McGill says, hard times flushes the chumps. And without a doubt, desperation does make us vulnerable to exploitation. But on the other hand, what if desperation is the road to faith? And what if the exhaustion of every other possibility that leaves us with nowhere else left to turn but to God is what opens up the door for an epiphany? I mean, that's what we're talking about during this season. We're talking about epiphanies, those life-altering experiences of revelation or insight about God and ourselves that build our faith and shape our lives and help us understand who we are in relation to Jesus. And we're looking at various biblical stories about people who have those kinds of experiences. In particular, they have epiphanies about who is Jesus. And we're trying to glean something from those stories about how we might, or where we might, be more likely to have such faith-building experiences in our own lives. Last week, we looked at the experience of the forgiveness of sin as a place for epiphany. In this morning's passage, we read the story of two desperate people who come to Jesus. They were people with really nowhere left to turn. But nonetheless, there were people hoping against hope whose lives would be changed and whose fragile, desperate faith would be made solid by this encounter they have with Jesus. In other words, their desperation led to their epiphany. The first character was a man named Jairus. He is described by Luke as a leader of the synagogue, which is significant because Jesus wasn't particularly popular with the leadership of the synagogue. You might remember Simon the Pharisee from last week, who ends up saying, "Who does he think he is to forgive sin?" Or you might remember even in his own hometown synagogue in Nazareth, it was the leaders there that tried to throw him off a cliff. And while there certainly were some leaders in the synagogue who kept an open mind to Jesus, they couldn't let anyone know that if they did. You might remember Nicodemus coming to Jesus by night in order to not be seen by any of his peers. But now, Jairus' daughter is sick to the point of her impending death. As a father with daughters, I always hated reading this story. I could not let my mind wander to that place where this man was. Could you be more desperate? And it's pretty obvious that it's his desperation that opens the door for him looking beyond all the barriers he had that might have kept him from seeing and believing in who Jesus is. And then while Jesus and Jairus are on the way back to his house where his daughter is dying, there is this woman with a chronic health condition that not only has for her economic and physical consequences, but emotional and social ones as well. It is a condition that renders her ritually unclean in her community, a pariah, a religious outcast. Luke says she has spent everything she has on doctors and found no cure. Meaning, like Jairus, she too is desperate. And she's run out of options. Nowhere else to turn. But what she doesn't want to run out of is hope. So she turns to Jesus. She believes and she hopes. And those two things are really inseparable. That if she can just get close enough to touch the hem of his garment, she would be healed. Now my point is not that Jesus should be the last resort. But I would say that he is always our final hope. But I'm not a Christian scientist either. So I do think that Jairus and the woman, they did what they should have done. They went to the doctor first. So this sermon is not about faith healing. It's about salvaging hope. And it's about building faith by coming to see who Jesus is. It's about an epiphany that comes through desperation and faith that sometimes comes when we are at the end of our rope. And according to Luke, apparently that's okay if that's where it happens. It doesn't mean that it's not faith because it's driven by desperation. Maybe it's what Jesus means when he said, if we just had as much faith as a grain of mustard seed. It will be enough if it opens us up to who He is. Though I know the skeptic could also say that this desperate turn to Jesus is just wishful thinking, the denial of reality. Sigmund Freud wrote a little book that was entitled The Future of an Illusion, in which he basically says God is the biggest illusion of wishful thinking that man has ever dreamed up. The point of Everett McGill, right? Hard times brings out the chumps. Wishful thinking. But while Freud was a brilliant man, I just wonder maybe if he just never got desperate enough. But I want to talk about why desperate faith is not wishful thinking. And for this, I refer to something John Ortberg wrote. It's interesting. Ortberg is a Freudian-trained psychologist and a Christian pastor. He says, wishful thinking is hoping for something, meaning hoping for a particular outcome in a situation. While faith, he says, is hoping in someone, no matter the outcome. Now, you do have to wonder what would have happened to Jairus had his daughter not been saved, or what would happen to this woman had her illness not been healed that day. And I don't know. Maybe none of us know until we're there. Eventually, I do know this. Jairus would face his own death. He might even face again one day the death of his daughter. That is the reality of life and death in this world. And eventually, this woman who got healed, she would get sick again. It is the inevitability of our lives, our physical lives. But after their experience that day, their epiphany of who Jesus is, somehow I'll bet their hope will never again be shaken, simply because the next time their hope would be in someone, not in something. And that's what God was offering in faith in Jesus, that whosoever believes in Him would not perish. Hope would not perish for us. And for many of us, we just won't look to Him until we've exhausted all that we have looking for a cure or a purpose or something solid to stand on or someone divine enough to hope in or something meaningful enough to follow or someone worthy of my devotion. I mean, certainly, we're not all going to be desperate. Most of us here are not today. And the goal is not somehow to make myself desperate. But desperation is characterized by a few things that we can seek. First of all, I would say that desperation humbles us. I mean, can you imagine Jairus, this proud, prominent man, having to fall at the feet of Jesus and beg this man whose circle of peers has scoffed and discredited and belittled? I mean, Jairus is a man who is used to being in control, in charge, independent. And now he finds himself absolutely dependent upon someone else. You know, Jesus said once, unless we become like little children, we will never enter the kingdom. I think what he means is unless we find the condition of submissiveness that brings true security. Until we can accept the fact that I'm really not in control. I mean, we say sometimes God helps those who help themselves, right? But here it says God helps those who finally can admit they are helpless. What he means is those who are humble. And desperation will make you humble. And the humility that's born of desperation, the other thing it does is it opens up closed minds. You see, my pride often says, I know I'm right about this. And Jairus will have to admit that maybe he was wrong about Jesus. I mean, if nothing else, he had to be thinking before he went, what if I'm wrong? What if I don't turn to Him? But what if his pride would have kept him that day from falling upon his knees at Jesus' feet? Think what that would have cost him that day. But not just that day. Think what that will cost him going forward in his life. Think what his faith knows now that will sustain him going forward in his life that he would have missed in his pride that he was right about who Jesus was. And so, secondly, desperation and the humility it brings, it pushes us beyond caring what other people think of us. See, Jairus doesn't care what the other leaders of the synagogue think of him. And that is a hard place to reach for some of us. And this woman, crawling through a crowd of people, throwing aside whatever little dignity she had left. I mean, we work so hard in life at our impression management, building our public persona, our image. I mean, for some of us, it is really hard to get far enough beyond caring what other people think to truly meet Jesus for who he is. I mean, let's face it. The expression of faith in Jesus is pretty easy for us here. We're among friends, fellow believers. But what about when we're out there among skeptics and the self-assured? And this woman, because she's desperate, she risked rejection. She risked condemnation. And if you've never been desperate, never been humble, never had nowhere else to turn, this is a hard story to understand. See, they say desperate people do desperate things, right? And faith may be a desperate thing. But unless we risk faith and hope, we'll never know. And not everybody has to be desperate in order to have an epiphany about Jesus or myself to risk faith. As we've already seen, we'll see later, there are other places that are ripe for epiphany. Desperation just happens to be one. But in the end, I do know this, most of the things that we hope in, that is the outcomes that we keep hoping for, will disappoint us. And they'll leave us with nothing. But faith and hope in someone named Jesus. Well, as Paul said, in the end, when everything else has failed, faith, hope, and love will abide. And all three are found in him. So believe me, I am not here today to tell you that you can hope for something, that if we believe, it will all work out the way we want it to. That the one we love will get well. That the job I want, I'll get. That I'll reach my goals. That I'll live my dreams. I'll leave that, if you want it, to the Joel Osteen preachers of the world. I can only tell you that if you hope in someone whose name is Jesus, that no matter how it turns out, in the end, he will not disappoint you. And I know, because I have been desperate. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me.